Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Well, I sort of tired of crying, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, the lovely and talented and always acerbic Joan Pride. Joan, welcome back to the show.
That's me. Thanks, Jim.
That's like a badge of honor for you, isn't it, Joan?
Boy, of course.
The acerbic,
you know,
part.
Yeah.
Is that acerbic or acerbic?
Oh, could be both. I don't know.
Either one of those, huh?
Right.
Hey, Joan, what's the news in Washington? You got an update for us?
Well, as you know, Congress is moving toward what they called, or the Senate was moving toward what they called the nuclear option, in which the Republican leadership was going to try to invoke a parliamentary procedure that would have allowed votes on judicial nominees to go through without the Democrats, or the minority party, mm-hmm. being able to filibuster.
Right.
Because it would have just allowed a 50% plus one vote. Now, what happened was, interestingly enough, the leadership, the Democratic and Republican leadership, couldn't agree on a plan to avert this thing from happening, but a group of 14, a bipartisan group of 14 senators came together and worked out a set of principles.
I'm not calling them the infamous 14.
You're calling them the infamous 14?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I call them the Gang of 14, but in any case, they worked out this deal where they agreed to stand together in terms of a voting block so that neither the Republican leadership has enough votes to invoke this so-called nuclear option, but neither do the Democrats have enough votes to sustain a filibuster. So they're kind of at an impasse now.
Didn't they basically hijack the Senate?
Well, that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is the leadership wasn't leading, so somebody had to do something.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, that's the reason you have structure, you have procedures that when you get to a certain point, you know, you have this democratic process that we go through, which is that ultimately the majority will rule, and that's what was going to happen, and that's what would have happened if the Democrats had been in the leadership as well. But you got these 14 that basically said, you know what, we're going to impose our rules on everybody. Isn't that what they did?
Well, like I said, that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is leadership wasn't leading. Somebody had to fill the vacuum. Some people would say that the leadership in the Senate right now is very poor. Others would not.
Right. Well, I'm not going to argue about the quality of the leadership at all. But
just explaining that may be why you had a vacuum that was there to be filled by these 14 senators.
Well, the interesting thing to me is that we now have three new appellate judges.
Right.
That the Democrats, until this week, the Democrats apparently thought were horrible and there's no way possible they'd let in, but they're now going to let them in. So what does that say about their principles? And we now have 2 to 4 other judges that will not be approved, that the Republicans thought strongly that they should have been before this week. What does that say about their principles? And so,
well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, the thing is, the majority party at this point, and I guess they all feel this way, wants to be able to get an appointments through no matter what the minority party feels. So I guess it's not relevant as to whether the Democrats like these individuals or not.
Well, with regard to judicial nominees, there isn't a majority party anymore, is there? There's a new bunch of mugwumps. I think that's what we would call these people, wouldn't you? I
mean, some people call them leaders. Some people call them mugwumps.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, this is kind of what happened back in the 19th century. There was a group of Republicans, I think, went over and kind of got in the middle and flipped some decisions the other way, and they called them mugwumps. But anyway,
hey, I like that word. You have your mug on one side and your wump on the other.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's a great term. Okay, Joan, let me ask you one more question before we leave this. Do you think that this kind of a relationship, this kind of a settlement, will last?
No.
How long do you think it will take?
About 5 more minutes.
That's a very cynical.
Yeah, well, you ask. You ask.
I'm not as cynical as you, Joan. I think 10 minutes at least.
Oh, wow. You're really going out on a limb there.
Yeah, I'm a lot more even-handed about things. I think it's going to take 10. No, I tell you what's going to happen. It's going to last as long as it takes to clear out the issues that are right in front of them, the ones that they've specifically mentioned.
Yes.
It'll last for that, but that's it. We'll get the three that they admitted, the Democrats said that they would let go. The Republicans will roll the other two under the bus. And then when we get into the fog a little bit on others that will come up that may not be as much on the screen or the radar screen as they are now, or as they will be, I think that's when we're going to have this all to do over again, don't you think?
Oh, sure. I think so.
So basically all it did was postpone the inevitable, right?
It postponed things, yeah. No one should assume that this – maybe I hope we're wrong. I really do. But I don't think anybody should assume that this solves anything forever.
Right. And, of course, also one of the things that we should point out, Joan, apparently what was going to happen with the vote to abolish the filibuster was only for judicial nominees. It wasn't going to abolish the filibuster for other things, for legislation.
Right, and you were also right last week. I know, you were right, I was wrong. Boy, isn't that an historic statement.
No, I'm sorry, Joan, what was that?
Yeah. No, I'm not repeating that. That was a one-time only. It does not apparently it does not cover other nominees.
Right.
Only judicial nominees.
Yeah, exactly. So that it was the hand-wringing that this was going to take down the Senate, that this is going to, you know, neutralize the greatest deliberative body in the world, that really was over-the-top talk, and especially when you understand that apparently, with only a couple of exceptions prior to 4 years ago, appellate nominees had not been filibustered at all in the past.
Right.
Right.
Well, had never in our history?
Well, I said with the exception of a couple. Wasn't Abe Fortas was one, I think, and a couple of others, but there had been almost no filibustering of that.
Well, there may be a reason for that, though. I think there may have been more real. You know, the Senate is supposed to be for advice and consent, and I don't know that that's necessarily the case anymore.
Well, it's apparently the rules have been changing over the last few years. It goes back, Joan. I'm going to say something I said last hour, and I said 10 years ago. And that is that the Republicans still haven't figured out how to be in the leadership, and the Democrats still haven't figured out how to be
in
the minority.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of it. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about your security and what are folks doing about it. And does the government need to get involved with regard to securing your personal information? 20 after. Stay with us.
Everybody's looking.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here, too. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And
Jim?
Joan, yes.
Jim?
Yes, yes.
How old is that song?
do you do that
just to annoy me?
How am I doing?
Oh, you're doing a fantastic job.
Well, then it's working.
Ugh.
That's a classic, Joan.
Okay.
That's Buddy Holly and the Crickets. From about 1960.
42.
No, 1960.
Oh, boy.
It's
only 45 years ago.
It's rock and roll history. Rock and roll classic, Joan. It doesn't get any better than that.
Whatever.
I love it when my music annoys you.
Well, it's working.
Joan, let's talk about let's talk about ID theft. This is a big business. This is an industry now, isn't it?
Well, it kind of has to be, you know. I mean,
what's the size? Do we know?
Let's see. I'm trying to remember.
It's in the billions, isn't it?
Yeah, I think probably it's hard to even. We've got a nice little graph here: worldwide spending on IT security, just to give you an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we're looking at more than $30 billion a year.
About $32 billion.
And we're saying that's going to. Gosh, go above $40 billion in a couple of years,
and that's just in the protection. Never mind what we're spending, what we're losing because of the ID thefts,
right?
And all that, and it's becoming so much more sophisticated. Joan, I want to stick a fishing story in here
okay.
right now. And of course, as you know, when I say fishing, I'm talking of P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G.
Yeah.
Fishing, folks, is where you get sent an email that looks like it's coming from your bank or from your airline or from somebody you think you do business with, or maybe you don't, but maybe you even think, hey, dude, I didn't know I did business with them. And they ask you to provide them with certain information to update their records or something like that. Right, Joan?
Right.
Have you been phished before?
I'm trying to think if I have or not.
Been at home because your corporate firewall probably protects you from that.
Yeah.
But, or maybe
yeah,
not.
I have
maybe
an
not,
ancient
though.
Internet connection. It's an old dial-up thing, so I'm not on very much.
Well, see, if you've got dial-up at home, then they're gonna avoid you because you're like a dinosaur.
Yeah, good. See, that's fine. Let them avoid me.
But Joan, recently I have gotten phished by people who said they were with eBay and with PayPal.
Ooh.
And told me that my account was about to become, you know, because there was some kind of, they actually said there'd been some kind of improper activity, meaning somebody had, you know, had gotten into my account or something. And here are these guys, now talk about chutzpah. These guys, that's what they want to do. And they're telling me that I need to give them some update my information because they think this is what's already happened.
Boy, they do have a lot of nerve.
They do. Listen. I actually went to the link. It doesn't hurt to go to the link. They just
okay.
I guess they can drop a cookie on you, I guess, but I went to the link because it was so compelling. I actually thought it was eBay.
Wow.
And I got there and I didn't like what I saw. It was let me tell you what. It looked like eBay's website. In fact, it had all the links. They almost replicated eBay's website.
Ooh.
It was unbelievable. So I sent an example of both of those to eBay and to PayPal.
Good.
And they emailed me back and said, this is phishing.
Ah.
Don't give these people any information.
Wow.
It was the most compelling thing I've ever seen in my life. And Joan, I could see where a lot of people who aren't keeping up with this kind of thing would be completely convinced that this was legitimate.
Yeah.
Joan, the bottom line is, don't give the people you do business with who are legitimate will not ask you to update your information.
Yeah, and they always tell us that, and we have to listen to that. That's very true. They won't solicit us for that.
Right, but other ways of stealing ID theft is just stealing it through the list that we're on, Joan. Right.
Right.
And that's what the government's starting to get involved with a little bit, isn't
right.
it?
Right. Well, and there's also old-fashioned ways of stealing IDs. You know, I think
right.
guys are still going through dumpsters and pulling out credit card
mm-hmm.
bills and applications and things like that.
Right. Or and you know, every time you give somebody a credit card at a restaurant and they leave your presence with it, you're subject to that information being stolen, aren't you?
Right.
And every time there's a receipt, as you say, that's got your credit card information on it or anything like that, anything that's got your Social Security number on it, all that's subject to you're in danger of having your ID stolen. But, Joan, what does the government think that they should be doing about this? They've got some ideas, don't they?
That's right. And I guess what we're saying is that Congress is really going to get involved, and they're working on legislation to combat this. And interestingly enough, a lot of this is going to fall on the shoulders of business.
Right.
Because businesses are going to be penalized if their security isn't sufficient to protect people from this. And they're also going to implement notification requirements so that at least you'll know if, say, the company to which you gave your credit card number does have a firewall problem.
Right. Like if the credit card company or your insurance company or your health insurance company or whatever it might be, they're going to start requiring more security. And also when we come back, this is also going to apply to data brokers, list brokers. And we're going to talk about that and some other issues right after these messages, 29 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am the smart. I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks for hanging around with me today. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about our information, our personal private information, our credit card information, our financial information, our Social Security numbers. I went to a website the other day and was thinking about purchasing something, and they wanted me to give them my Social Security number.
Ooh.
I didn't just leave their site. I closed up the browser.
Yeah.
You know, I said,
your Social Security.
Yeah. And I said, I don't even remember who it was. And I said, you know what? This is not legitimate.
Yeah.
I mean, as I said, I didn't even just click back to another site. I closed the browser. I wanted those guys out of there. Folks, you should never give your Social Security number to anybody that isn't, unless it's like a credit card or something like that.
Yeah.
But, and then it should be people that you know. Joan, there are a lot of companies out there that are called data brokers, and they sell lists, basically. They collect and sell personal information to businesses. And if you ever wonder how you get a certain magazine, it's because you've gotten put on somebody's list that you buy those kinds of things, right?
Yeah.
And when you didn't order it. And those people are really have been kind of unregulated for a long time, but I think the government wants to get them to be a little more regulated, don't they?
Yes, one would hope.
Yeah. And they're trying to pass some privacy laws that will help in that way. Another thing, Joan, that a lot of people are concerned about, and you guys point this out at the bottom of the page on page one, is that they're concerned that all of this is going to slow the e-commerce revolution. What does Kiplinger think about that?
Well, we're not as concerned about that. We do think that there will be problems, you know, for individual companies that get caught in security breaches. But we think that consumers can sort of bounce back from this, and we're hopeful that it can be rectified.
Well, you know, Joan, we actually had a case where the bank got the idea that somebody was improperly attempting to use one of our cards.
Mm.
And they notified us, and boy, within 24 hours, we had a new card, a new number, and everything. So that was good. That was good security measures on the part of our bank.
Oh, definitely. And our credit card company does that too. If they think, you know, if we go out and charge up like crazy, which we don't do too often, they worry that there's something wrong, especially if it's in a different city.
Right.
And they will call to make sure that those charges were made by us.
Right. Yeah, and that's good. That's good security measures, and those are the kinds of things that will sort of help fight these identity thefts.
Right.
Joan, let's move over and talk about the economy. The news from the manufacturing sector you guys report this week isn't all bad. What's the news?
Well, we do admit that there are indicators that are painting kind of not a great picture, and that includes factory output and orders and things like that. But we're saying that in our inevitable optimistic way that the second half of the year is going to be better, that we sort of feel that there was a lull early this year and things are going to bounce back.
Well, and also the job situation in manufacturing is improving too, isn't it?
We're saying 200,000 more factory jobs this year. Mm-hmm. We don't say why. I'm sort of intrigued by that.
Well, I wonder, Joan, if part of it is going to be a little bit of the dollar, being as devalued as it is against a lot of other currencies.
Oh, right, yeah.
That could help some other things, Joan. It might be some of the trade agreements. You know, this CAFTA. The Central American Free Trade Agreement that we're in the process of getting passed, hopefully, you know, that may be another reason why you guys are optimistic about this, because what that's going to do is that's going to level the playing field between America with the United States and our Central American neighbors, because right now their goods are allowed to flow into our country without tariffs, but our goods are not allowed to do the same thing. to go into their countries.
That's right.
So what CAFTA will do will be to take those tariffs off, and that should really improve our manufacturing, especially in the textile areas.
Yes.
Recently, I had a guy on earlier with the U.S. Chamber who said that when we buy goods that are textile goods, garments that are made in Central America, it's very likely to have 60% American-made components.
Wow.
But when we buy goods from China and Asia, may only have less than 1% American goods.
Ooh.
So that's a good reason to buy in this hemisphere.
Absolutely.
When we come back, we're going to talk about taxes. That's a strong suit of Jones. We're going to move over also and talk a little bit about health, your health, and some other things we got on our mind. Right after these messages, 20 till, I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us.
When I die and the limits of rest.
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, your website, Kiplinger.com, is a very good one. And that's where folks can find out about your publications, can't they?
You bet.
Tell us about them.
Well, we have several letters. You know, you have the letter we're looking at now, the Kiplinger letter, and I work for the Kiplinger tax letter. And
but
we
you
also
guys are
have...
about to have 83rd anniversary in September.
I always know it's a couple years younger than Austin Kiplinger.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can keep track. And I believe Austin is,
1923.
Yeah. And let me also mention the Kiplinger agriculture letter.
Mm-hmm.
Can't forget that.
And the
California letter.
Yeah, yeah. Did you mention the tax? I think you said the tax.
Oh,
letter, of course.
Mention that first because it's mine.
You have to do that, yeah.
Yeah.
And those three, those last three are biweekly. The Kiplinger letter is every week, right?
Right.
And there's a magazine, too, isn't there?
There's a magazine. There's also another publication that I usually fail to mention, but the magazine is Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And the other monthly publication we have is called Kiplinger's Retirement Report.
Right.
Which is not just for retirees, but for people who are getting ready to retire. A lot of good information about planning for retirement in there.
And you can also get a 30-day free trial on all of these if you subscribe on the website at Kiplinger.com. Or I think you got a phone number, too, don't you, Joan?
Yes, we do. It's our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
You know, Joan, one of the things that that seems to be happening is that the Fed is getting, you know, what's it been a year and a half ago, they were wringing their hands over deflation. Now they're worried about inflation. And you guys report that because of that, we're going to get three more rate hikes this year.
Three more. And the only thing that making the markets feel better is that they're not raising them faster than expected. I mean, that's sort of finding the tiniest little silver lining in the cloud there.
Well, we got to figure out how to get them a better on and off switch. You know, it seems like they either know how to turn it on and leave it on or turn it off and leave it off.
Well, they just seem kind of, they're always late to the party or something.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Joan, is the dollar going to rally this year? What are you guys saying about that?
Well,
you're our currency expert.
Oh, no. Well, no, actually, we say it's going to fizzle. And there's sort of an underlying cause there, which is the U.S. trade deficit.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, Joan, a lot of people are trying to, are jawboning the Chinese to get them to let the dollar float, to unpeg it from the Chinese yuan, to unpeg and float against the dollar, not be tied to the dollar.
Right.
But you know, Joan, if that happens, one of the immediate things that will happen is it will start, U.S. consumers will start paying more for goods. Won't they?
Well, that's right, yeah.
So that could be inflationary. So this currency issue, Joan, one of these days you're going to have to take a whole hour and just teach us all you know about currency, right?
I'll try 2 minutes.
It won't take an hour?
Not quite.
Well, how about taxes, Joan? That's the next segment. And you know a lot about taxes. Tell us about what's going on.
I know
there.
A little. That's actually one thing I know a little bit about. You're going to see the President Bush's tax reform panel in the news for over the next year. And
isn't there a report due out from them at the end of the summer?
Yes, there is. And we're not saying that the ideas are dead or anything like that, but we're just saying don't expect them to get implemented this year. This is a long-term process. It's going to take probably a couple of years to get any of these ideas implemented, if any of them are.
You know, Joan, the last time there was major tax reform was 1986.
Yes, I
remember it well.
Steve
Forbes was on the show in the previous hour, and he pointed out, and he also has this in his editorial in Forbes this week, folks, that since 1986, that the tax code has been amended 14,000 times.
Wow.
Now, think about that. Now, we've got to do something to simplify the tax code. We've got to create a tax system that brings us into the 21st century and that makes more sense for what I consider to be the century of the entrepreneur, Joan.
Right.
And the one we have, the only people it serves, Joan, are the politicians, because it gives them an opportunity to manipulate us economically and to get various groups to vote for them.
Yeah.
It's a drug, isn't it, basically, the tax
code? Well, that's one way to look at it, sure.
It's Congress's drug, and we've got to get it fixed. And, Joan, I think I'm the more every day I'm agreeing with Steve Forbes in that we need a flat tax. What do you think? You're a tax expert. What do you think about the flat tax?
Do we need? Well, in theory, it's a great idea. I think executing it is much more difficult.
Why?
Why?
Why is executing it? I mean,
well, what would the rate be?
Well, Steve says that his proposal is up to about $46,000, you'd pay no tax.
Okay.
Above that, 17%, but no extra tax, but no taxes on dividends or interest and that sort of thing.
And you raise as much revenue as you're raising now, or is the idea to raise less revenue?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know his answer to that. But I will tell you, he's got a book coming out this summer that will explain all that. But mm-hmm. I think apparently he believes that will raise enough revenue. But you know, there are billions of hours every year, Joan, that are wasted on just complying with a tax code.
Well, that's certainly true.
And it's incredibly unproductive.
Yeah.
But the flat tax, Joan, as opposed to say, value-added tax or national sales tax. Those are the dangerous ones.
Well, they certainly are.
Well, the reason is because if you do away with, you got to do away with the income tax completely, and have only one tax. And value-added tax would allow the income tax to remain. Stand by, Tintil, stay with us. Right back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one thing I wanted to say again, in case I didn't say it properly before, with regard to sales tax, value-added tax, national sales tax, a value-added tax, or a flat tax. We have a 16th Amendment, as you know, in the Constitution that allows for a national income tax. Right,
right.
If we go to a national sales tax or a value-added tax, even if temporarily they abolish the IRS tax code, without doing away with the 16th Amendment, the government can always come back and add an income tax in addition to either the VAT or the value-added or the national sales tax. They can always add that unless we abolish the 16th Amendment. And that's what we have. That's what people have in Europe.
Right.
So since we're not going to abolish the 16th Amendment, we can replace the IRS code, the current code, with the flat tax. It would just be a replacement. It wouldn't be adding another kind of tax.
Mm-hmm.
If you see what I mean.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So that's the reason why flat tax, that's one of the good reasons why flat tax makes the most sense. What about, what's going on with the telephone tax? What's the
Well, this is kind of interesting. You know, the old, you get, there's a federal excise tax on all your phone calls, but the old law says it should be based on time and distance. And you know as well as I do that nobody, you know, long distance is kind of an old, antiquated concept.
Right.
It's only based on time now. So some savvy companies have been suing the IRS for refunds. The IRS, all these cases have landed in court, and the IRS is pretty much lost on every one. Now, this one case that we're talking about here, they won at the district court level, but now they've lost at the appellate level. So right now, they have lost everywhere.
So their basis for the argument, the company's arguments, is that they're being overtaxed? Because
the tax is an illegal tax because it's not being based as it should be in the law on time and distance.
Mm-hmm.
So now that doesn't mean that everybody's going to get off scot-free. What it means is Congress will just change the law and update it.
What's that going to mean for consumers?
Well, it won't mean a whole lot unless you had a chance to possibly, if you feel that you could get a pretty hefty refund and you file before Congress passes a new law, you might get a check.
Hmm. But who would know where to go and file that, right?
Well, that's a good question. I don't have the form number off the top of my head, but well,
I'm disappointed in you, Joan. I thought surely you'd have that form. And of course, we're all waiting with bated breath to get the number of that form. What about flex plans? What's going on? There's some news there, isn't there?
Well, before we get to that, it's form 8849 and schedule 6.
I knew you'd do it. Give it to us again.
Form 8849, and it should be accompanied by Schedule 6.
I can hear the pencil scratching that out right now.
Well, they should. Now, flex plans, also known as cafeteria plans, let you put money away off the top of your income. These are accounts provided by your employer. You put your own money in,
right,
and you reimburse yourself for medical expenses that aren't covered by your insurance plan. For example, eyeglasses is a good typical example. And the problem with these accounts is that any money left at the end of the year, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never liked that rule. There's some legislation kicking around in Congress that would let you dump any leftover money into your 401k, which
so you don't
is a great
use it
idea.
Or lose it.
So you don't, well, no, this rule doesn't let you do that. It's kind of an interim rule that says that you have an extra 3 months beyond the end of the year.
It doesn't roll over forever, just
right,
3 months.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a grace period, so to speak.
A little one.
Yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it?
It's a first step.
Well, it seems to me that it ought to roll all. It ought to keep rolling forever till you use it.
Well, that's
what
I think.
You should never lose it.
Well, I think I could see where there could be abuses of people who load up their plans just to avoid tax.
Right.
Because this comes off the top of your income.
Mm-hmm. Joan, let's move over and talk about. Let's go to page 4 and talk about business law. There's some new cases in front of the Supreme Court. One of them is deciding whether workers should be paid for the time it takes them to put on safety gear. What do you think?
Well, I guess that means that they're having people clock in after they put the gear on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess they're saying clock in and then put the gear on.
Mm-hmm. So that seems like a small issue
to get to the Supreme Court,
but... But anyway, it's an example of some of the riveting stuff the Supreme Court gets to decide, right.
Right,
Joe?
That's right.
Makes you want to be a Supreme Court judge immediately.
Oh, I'm sure I'm on the way to do that. Yeah.
Hey, Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Sounds good.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. She's with the Kiplinger Editors, and she'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. And folks, let's not ever forget also my other heroes, and I know yours too. Every man and woman standing a post on behalf of us around the world in the harm's way. God bless you, all of you. God be with you. This is Jim Blassingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.